Gentlemen, it's time for another round of racing and rocking with Dragnus.com. Staging in the left lane is your host, founder and creator of the Draglist, Bill Pratt. And in the right lane, John, the Wildcat One. You're going to hear news and interviews from the world of drag racing, both now and then. So get yourself situated, pull your belts tight, grab your favorite beverage, and get ready for some racing and rocking.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome to Racing and Rockin' with Draglist.com, produced and broadcast by the Zeus Radio Network for Racers Reunion Radio. I'm Bill Pratt. It's great to be with you tonight, because tonight we feature once again a dual champion, Mr. Jeff Strickland, who won the 2016 NHRA Stock and Top Dragster Championships. I'm going to ask some racing questions. John's going to ask some rocking questions. And you can join our live chat during the show. Go to racersreunion.com and look for the right-hand column. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, dual winner last year, Mr. Jeff Strickland. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing great. So glad to have you on here. I tell you what, you had a heck of a 2016. You drove for Gray Motorsports, one of those bad Copo Camaros, and took the Stock Eliminator Championship. And then you won in Top Dragster as well with some amazing early season theatrics, and in clinching both titles with late wins and just making it happen. Tell us about that great season.
Well, I don't know if you can put it all into words or not. It's been that was one of those seasons that happens that you know it's kind of like a Cinderella story. You know, and just you don't expect all that stuff to go on, or especially to happen that way. You just hope to go do your best, and have fun, do what you do, and next thing you know, it's like, oh my goodness, all this stuff's right here in front of me. Now it's time to go to work.
Hey, kind of lined them all up, and you had to hit the balls in. Well, let's say in the Stock Eliminator, you won Gainesville and Bristol. Four semifinals throughout the year, and then one Pomona, bringing it home right at the last race of the year. Tell us about that event.
They were all great. Pomona, actually, I lost in the finals, but Bob Gullett, he laid down a great run. Just good cars, man. The Copo, the GM, and all their hard work that goes into that thing, and with, you know, obviously Berger Chevrolet, GM Parts now, and Cagnazzi, all of those guys that they've spent so much time and effort on R&D, it makes a driver's job a lot easier when you have equipment like what I had to work with.
They are amazing things. You know, I'm a, you know, a little bit of an older gentleman, and I remember when the year 1970 hit, and that was pretty much the apex of performance in Stock Eliminator, stock-bodied cars. And then, you know, the gas crisis came in and all the smog equipment. We never thought we'd see fast cars again, but these things are faster off the showroom floor now than anything has ever been. Isn't that the case?
Yes, they are. They're very impressive. You know, some of the horsepower numbers and the ETs. I mean, you know, you got stockers going 820s, 830s. I mean, I remember, I think it was Mr. Little from out west, I think he was the first one, and wasn't that long ago, was the first one into the nines in a stocker. Now they're looking at breaking into the sevens this year, probably.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, I can't keep up with that anymore.
Yeah, it's impressive, that's for sure.
Well, let's jump on the Top Dragster, because we got to split the show between two categories. You won your first two starts, and then went throughout the season, and then you came in and clinched your title at the Las Vegas Lucas Oil Drag Racing Series event. Once again, kind of started out strong and then put it together at the last race when all the cards were on the table. Tell us about that event.
I think our Top Dragster car, we had struggled with going through the Pro Charger combination, and we had gotten to, I basically had to test for a year. And then last year, when we started 2016, we didn't touch the car from the end of 2015. We put it up on stands in the shop, didn't touch a thing, said it's good, let's go and be ready to race. And I think that paid off. You know, that I think that was the biggest difference, was not having a different converter or, you know, different fuel setup or different tires or anything like that. Everything was the same. It was all ready to go. And the car was really good, which I think at the beginning of the year if there's a such thing as an advantage in drag racing, it's having good equipment at the beginning of the year, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like you had it. It was all because you didn't have to mess around with it. It didn't change the combo much. You pretty much had a working combo that you started with when other folks might have been trying to experiment a little bit. Is that what it sounds like?
Yeah, and going as fast as Top Dragster, as we go in Top Dragster, I should say, it's a little bit more of a challenge because you can put together a bracket car that goes, say, 450s in the eighth mile, and anybody can make one of those go down the racetrack. But mm-hmm. you shave another half a second off of that, now you're going, I mean, it goes 408 to 412, depending on where you're at to the eighth mile. Just to get to 200 feet out, it's not as crazy as a top fueler, but it is a challenge to get to get down the racetrack, you know. And then on top of that, when you're staging, you know, there's a lot going on in your mind, and one of the biggest things is, you know, when you let go of the trans brake is, okay, hang on, which way is it going to go? You know, is it going to go straight? Is it going to shake? Is it going to do a wheelie? I mean, it's fun. It's a big adrenaline rush running Top Dragster.
Well, no doubt. Well, you know, those things are so fast, and when you think about the eighth mile, and you mentioned top fuel cars, of course, back in the 70s, they'd run them on the eighth in some of those small tracks down south, and I guarantee you they would be thrilled to get 408s and 412s, you know, ETs out of those things. I mean, when those, it's just amazing how fast you're going in those cars.
Right. I've had a lot of people, and Joe Costello, too, he's always telling me, he goes, I don't get it. Alcohol dragsters used to go, you know, 640s, 650s. He goes, you guys are bracket racing going 6 flat to 630s.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, we are. But and it happens really, really fast. There's not a lot of, I don't know the correct way to word that, but in some cases, it's better because you don't have time to think. You just kind of react to what's going on around you, and your instincts take over. And I think that helps a lot too. You know, where in stock eliminator, sometimes, you know, the run, and I have a pretty fast stocker that goes 930s, 940s. There's a lot of time to think in 9 seconds. Where going 630s, there's not a lot of time to think about what's going on. So you just kind of ride down through there, and before you know it, oh, I got to get the motor shut off, get the chutes out. And, you know, it's over so quick, you don't have time to make as many mistakes, I don't think.
Right. Well, it's so interesting because, you know, big part of the bracket racing deal is the looking over, the making sure where you are, making sure you're not taking too much wind light. I mean, how do you still do that sort of thing when you're running the 630 cars, or is it something that you just kind of have to go on instinct?
You can see it all developing. It's just it happens, like I was saying a while ago, it happens so fast that you don't really think about it. In bracket racing, you know, there's a lot of time, by the time you leave the start line and you look at your opponent, and you're starting to get a gauge of what's going on at half track. Well, mm-hmm. by the time you're to the eighth mile running Top Dragster, most of the time your decision is already made what you're about to do.
Right.
You know, you're either catching the guy or you're not catching the guy, or he is or not catching you. And then, you know, my mind's pretty much made up by the eighth mile what we're doing. You know, if I'm going to try to ride the brake, stop, hold it on the floor. And it's hard to stop going that fast if you were to drop, as you do in bracket racing. And it's hard to kill, let's say, you know, it's hard to kill more than about 200 or 300s going that fast.
Mm-hmm.
You have to kill a lot early to kill that much. For instance, I had a run where normal, I was going down the racetrack, I was dragging the brake in the Top Dragster car thinking, man, I'm killing a lot. I've killed plenty. Make sure and cross first. And I get my time slip, and I feel like in a normal bracket race, I would have probably killed 400 to 600s, and mm-hmm. I killed a hundredth and a half to two hundredths going fast.
Right. Wow.
It just doesn't slow the car down. You can't slow it down hardly.
Sure. Well, you know, the feet per second are just flying at that point. And when I do a little quick math in my head, you know, you only have about 2 seconds that, you know, you're carrying on the top end, right? I mean, the four seconds of a 6.30 run is, it gets you to half track. So you're back halfing it in 2 seconds. And that's just not a lot of time to work with.
No. And if you look at RPMs on a graph, by the time it takes you to lift on the throttle and the engine to respond and to get back on the throttle, there's almost another 6/10 just in letting off the throttle, one full throttle and back on it. Mm-hmm. If you look, wow, at RPM graph in time. So yeah, 2 seconds is that's not much time. That's why I'm saying by the time we get to the 8th mile, your decision should be made at that point.
Oh, it's so fascinating. And so to be able to master both of these combinations is really something, because, you know, a low 9 second stock car is very, very impressive, but as you said, it's considerably different than the top dragster. And, you know, how did you race both of those cars at most events that you attended, or did you alternate on occasion?
Believe it or not, it would probably take me 30 minutes to tell you exactly what car I drove which week. But I mean, we were talking about it in the shop the other day, but there was actually two different Copos and two different dragsters throughout year. So I drove four different cars in stock or, you know, top dragster. We had started the year with the fast dragster, and then when it looked like the field wasn't going to be crazy fast, I had a bracket car, and it was really, really good. So if there was not going to be a 680 bump, then I would unload my bracket car that went 7.0s or 690s and have all the confidence in the world, because the car was so consistent and I didn't have to worry about it going down the racetrack.
Right.
You know, it's going to go 692, 693, 692. It was just that good. So if I had the opportunity to race that car, I did. Mm-hmm. And then in stock, we had a little deal. The first of the year, I was going to start with the 427 Copo, and I did at Gainesville. And then with Adam, Adam Burbridge couldn't get into the Gator Nationals without entering the factory shootout. So we switched cars for the Gator Nationals, and he drove the 427 car there. I jumped in the 350 car and then had success in the 350 car. So it was like, well, now which car should we be driving? and we go to Atlanta, and Adam Badgett, he also drives, you know, for Victor, and he was more comfortable in the 350 car. So once we raced Atlanta, and I had two semis there in the 350 car, he says, you know, would you rather drive the 427 or the 350? I was like, man, whatever. Whatever you want to drive. He goes, well, I like the 350 car better. And I was like, well, I'll take the 427 car. So he took the 350 car. I got back in the 427 car, and here we went through the rest of the year. So it was we played the musical chairs there for a little while.
Really, really neat. So you're not a double threat; you're a quadruple threat with those cars, and that's fascinating. I know that the top dragster thing is in top sportsman for the same reason. You know, you got to be fast enough to get in the field, but you want to be slow enough to be consistent. It's a fine line. It's great that you have both cars available to make that happen whenever the air wasn't too crazy and the competition wasn't too fast. That's perfect.
Yeah, we kind of downsized this winter, and I sold the bracket car. And if I go to a bracket race, I want to be on the door car side. So we have my dad's Chevy 2 that we've had since the late 80s when I started racing. Mm-hmm. And if I go to a bracket race, I'll run the Chevy 2. If we go to an NHRA race, we have the Copo, the new Copo, the 2016 car, and the same dragster, but we are making a change with the Copo, getting a new car.
So good. Wow. Well, nothing but options.
Yeah, we might as well change cars. I mean, we changed, what, four times last year, so we might as well change something this year, right?
Well, you got to one-up yourself, right? It's so great.
Yeah, it's this new car, it's immaculate. I mean, I just walk around it daily in the shop. We just picked it up from Vic's place last weekend, and we got all the new lettering on it with the GM parts now and all that in place. Mm-hmm. And this car is a work of art. It's like, why do you even want to race this thing? It's too pretty. but you know, GM, they want it out there, and Berger, and I'm like, hey guys, whatever you guys want to do, you tell me. I'll drive. I'll be glad to drive. So,
well, sounds like they got a fabulous representative to get behind the wheel of that thing. Is you'll certainly get a lot of attention behind the wheel.
Thank you. I'm still shocked that I got the opportunity, and for the results that we've had, you couldn't have written a better story for it to happen the way that it did. So, and it's great. I mean, I've met a lot of new people, and all the guys at GM and Vic, his family, you know, Roger Allen, all of those guys, they are so good to work with. They're always in a good mood. They're happy people. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, if you surround yourself with good people, good things happen. And that's living proof.
Well, it sounds like you got it going on. But let me ask you one question here to make you test your memory banks a little bit. What was your most fun, your most miserable, and the craziest time you experienced last year? Sounds like you've got a lot to work from there.
Last year, my most miserable time? I don't know if I don't really. I keep a short memory on the bad side, if that makes sense. I try to forget the bad stuff as soon as possible. I would say, as far as being aggravated, Chicago, I was pretty aggravated because I felt like we had a good shot to do well at the Joliet National. Mm-hmm. And did everything but try to cross the center line second round. And I was upset. And then the Copo had threw a little bit of a fit. It had a little miss in it. And I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't put my finger on it. So we were checking ground. We were checking injectors, crank sensor, cam sensors, all this stuff. So for 10 hours on the ride home, Larry, the guy that goes with me a lot, he drove all the way home, and I sat in the passenger seat with a laptop and completely rewrote a program, a fuel map, to make this Copo do what I thought it needed, that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And it worked out. We found the miss. We got it fixed. We got home with the dragster. We had a problem with it. We got it fixed. So I would say that would have been my most aggravated point of the year, would have been Chicago National, because I felt we had a good shot to win and didn't win in either car.
And you turn around and made it work. 10 hours of hard work to get you right. That sounds like an opportunity used.
It's good to have, you know, like Larry, you know, to help when we're traveling down the road, because a lot of times he can drive and I can just sit back and think about what just happened, mm-hmm. write down what I think needs to be fixed, and be ahead of the game for the next week to get all these problems fixed or to tinker and try to make things better for the following week. So it does help when you don't have to drive all the way to the races and all the way back and do everything by yourself. It's a huge help. And Brent Lewis at work that works with me, he's a huge help. He's my brother-in-law, and he takes a lot of load off of me at work. And that showed to be a big improvement in our racing in 2016 also.
And you got wonderful teamwork and wonderful support. And, man, a cerebral guy writing programs, driving the car, and four different ways to go. And, man, you're impressing me too much. I'm going to turn you over to my partner. Let's talk about some rocking stuff here. So racing stuff's about to blow my mind. John, take it away.
Thanks, BP. Jeff, what part of the country you live in?
I am in Northwest Alabama.
Oh, okay. I thought I recognized your accent. I'm in Houston, and okay. I was going to ask you about what kind of music is your favorite.
Well, I'm a music nut to start with. With my kids, we try to keep the music, you know, as clean because I've whatever. But any kind of like dance music, I love country music. Garth Brooks is probably my favorite, my personal favorite. As far as what we listen to, I'll listen to almost anything except for the crazy shouting music. I don't like that stuff at all. I don't even want it anywhere around me. But anything upbeat, happy, put you in a good mood, stuff that me and my kids and my wife, we'll have a dance party. You know, it might be Taylor Swift. You know, my daughter loves Taylor Swift. My son, he loves, what is that song? I can't think of it right now. It's probably not a good group to listen to, but he likes the song Ride, I think is the name of it.
So
I don't remember the group that sings it. I'm terrible with names, but any kind of upbeat, happy music, you know, that's my favorite stuff.
When you go to the races, do you ever have a song on your mind that gets you pumped up to go out there and race with?
Actually, no. I'll turn the radio on sometimes. I'll listen to the PA, what's going on at the racetrack. Every now and then, if there's a good radio, Charlotte has a really good radio station. I think it's 103.1 or something that I listen to there. And they have just upbeat, happy music, but no particular song. I might get a song going through my head that puts me in a good mood, and I'll have it in my head. But as far as listening to music, I don't ever put earbuds in or anything like that. I just try to be happy and think happy thoughts and have fun. And that's the name of the game. Realize how lucky we are to get to do what we get to do.
Well, you got that right, man. No doubt about it. You know, you made me think when you mentioned Garth Brooks, and this was in the early 1990s. I was working at Unocal here in Houston, and they closed down the Oklahoma City office, and they moved all their materials down here. And I got Garth Brooks' dad's drafting supplies. had his name on all of it and everything, you know. And I said, well, I'm going to put this aside. One of these days I'm going to send that to Garth because I know he'd want it. And he had old school stuff, man. It was all done by hand up there, you know. And we went full digital down here in Houston, but it was Garth Brooks' dad stuff. Have you been to a concert lately that you recall that would be noteworthy at this time?
You know, the closest thing I get to a concert would be watching, you know, the Grammys or New Year's. New Year's, I love watching the New Year's thing because I know I said I like Garth Brooks a lot, but I really like Pitbull. He puts on a great show, like Garth Brooks, on the other side. You know, one's hip-hop, one's country, but I always like to watch the New Year's deal. But concert, gosh, I haven't been to a concert. Whew. I think Tom Petty might have been the last concert I ever went to back in the 90s.
That is a good concert. There is no doubt about that. My
son
told me
that. It was pretty good. It was different, for sure.
Yeah, he said that was the best concert he ever saw was Tom Petty. That and Stevie Wonder. He went to those two, and he loved them both. But, you know, racing and rocking, to me anyway, it's the same thing. It's drag racing is rock and roll, and I can't imagine hearing rock and roll without thinking about hot rods, you know, myself. So that's really great stuff, Jeff.
Yeah, I remembered one group. I keep thinking of if you were to ask me my favorite group growing up, it would have probably been Def Leppard.
All right.
Of all people, them and Creedence Clearwater. That's what me and my buddies used to listen to. We'd play cards all night, and we'd listen to Def Leppard and all those groups. And that was just, I do like Def Leppard. I did go to a Def Leppard concert one time. It was a good show.
Wow. Yeah, they're still doing it from what I hear.
Are they? I haven't heard much out of them, but as far as new songs. They don't have any new songs anymore, me and my wife used to go before we had kids. There's a local group. Well, we have Joseph Baldwin, who's a local celebrity. That he's a really great country singer, good entertainer. We go watch him some when he's local. And then this goofy name of a group, but the Velcro Pygmies. My wife loves them, so we go watch them. You know, they have a festival, the Handy Fest, I think is what it is. We go to and we'll go watch some groups there, but no, I love music. God, I love music. I think it sets the mood.
I'll tell you what, Jeff, you put us in a heck of a good mood tonight, sir. What a pleasure talking to you. I'd love to get you back on one of these days.
Well, anytime. Just give me a call.
Well, thank you. Have a great 2017 season. Put one of them Velcro pygmies on the dashboard of the dragster in the Coco and have a fabulous season, sir. All the best to you, and we look forward to seeing you down the road.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks, ladies Jeff. And gentlemen, Jeff Strickland, your 2016 NHRA Stock Eliminator and Top Dragster Champion. So great. John, let's turn it over to you for your take and this week's Racer of the Week.
Thanks, BP. My pick for Racer of the Week is Russell Izumo from Liwe Kauai, Hawaii. Russell was recommended to me by our friend Michael Baba Balbarino, whose 808 Fuel page on Facebook has the most up-to-date information on our sport in the Hawaiian Islands. Thanks, Michael. Russell Izumo has been drag racing virtually all his life, learning the ropes at a young age. He started out with a super gas Chevy S10, but he moved up in the last few years to his current dragster, which is a marvelous sight to behold. It runs as good as it looks, too. Russell told me it's a locally built chassis measuring out a 240-inch wheelbase. It was fabricated by Sportcraft Racing in Pearl City, Hawaii, by Tom Brown and Kel Komatsubara. Every once in a while, a car or a dragster comes along that captures my imagination, and I can't quit looking at it. I asked Russell about the fantastic appearance of this dragster, and he told me that it's a clear-coated wrap. I thought it was one of the most beautiful color and graphic design schemes I've ever seen. It seems to tell a story the more you look at it. The motor in the dragster is a big block Chevy with not too many mods to speak of, but it is tuned to perfection, and Russell's averages are ETs in the 830s at just under 160 miles an hour. He said he's going to bump it up later, but for now the car has been good for 5 first-place finishes in a row. Gizmo told me that he plans to give his seat in the car to our former junior dragster racer of the week, Devin R.K. Almarzo, when he graduates from the Junior League. He also mentioned that an upcoming Hawaiian racer of the week, Kelsey Lita Vieira, is the first of the junior dragster racers to step into one of the big cars. Now, the racers in Hawaii are a family, and they're bringing their kids into the sport with great care and integrity. Most of the racers are second and third generation drag racers, and the sport has become a tradition with them. My hat's off to you guys. I'm thankful to be able to feature y'all. Russell thanks his wife, his sons, and his gang for their support. He can be found every day at his business, which is Next Gen Diesel, of which he is the owner and CEO. The future for Russell, his dragster, and the great drag racers of Hawaii looks terrific. I'll continue to update the kids' progress, too, when they move up to the big leagues. Russell Izumo, we wish you good luck, safe racing, and the best of times in the future. Back to you, BP.
Thank you, John. A great segment, as always. And love the racing and rocking tonight. It was awesome. Hey,
yes.
We're down to 2 minutes, folks, so time here. We're going to go fast. And this, we needed more than 2 minutes for these lost friends because they're fabulous men. In fact, one that we all know and love. On the 9th, we lost Dennis Whitestone, one of the top alcohol tuners of all time. Super, super nice guy. Recently with Bunny Burkett, formerly with Carol Henson and many other East Coast teams. Dennis, farewell, big guy. We love you. John Big DeFilippis worked on Wilkerson's and Bartone's funny cars, another big-time talk alcohol guy, passed away. Danny Sons, the founder of DragRaceResults.com, one of my web contemporaries. Farewell, Danny. And Pesky, we don't know Pesky's name. He's a longtime team member at Lagana Racing. All these great men passing on this week. We love you guys, and condolences to your family and friends. Thanks to Jeff Strickland, John, Danny, Jeff and Dustin, Barb and Bud. We will see you next Monday night. Superstock World Champ Jimmy DeFrank from Southern California, and then Doug Dahl coming up the next week. Folks, have a great, great week. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.